Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon.
This is On Air Daily News for Friday, December 30th, 2022. I'm Naima Latif, and today on this 30th day of December, President Joe Biden issued statements reminding the nation of some of the events that occurred during his time in 2022, and he also issued some plans for next year. This is a statement issued today by Ambassador Susan E. Rice in the briefing room on the 29th. She says, "I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22. The past year undoubtedly brought its share of daunting challenges, from Putin's brutal war in Ukraine to devastating hurricanes along the Atlantic coast and fires in the West to stubborn high inflation around the globe. Yet 2022 also yielded remarkable progress for the American people. President Biden's leadership, the economy continued its historic run, creating more than 10.5 million jobs since President Biden took office. Inflation has shown signs of moderating. Thanks to the landmark American Rescue Plan, we've continued to deploy $122 billion in funding to enable schools to hire teachers, combat pandemic-related learning loss, and support students' mental health. We expanded and strengthened the Affordable Care Act, making it possible for 4 out of 5 people who signed up for health insurance through the Affordable Care Act to find health care coverage for $10 a month or less, and helping to drive the uninsured rate to 8%, the lowest ever. It was a year of historic accomplishments. President Biden signed the landmark Inflation Reduction Act, making unprecedented investments in clean energy, finally allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices, setting a $2,000 cap on out-of-pocket pharmacy costs, capping insulin in Medicare at $35 per prescription per month, and requiring rebates when drug prices increase faster than inflation. The president brought together Republicans and Democrats to pass the most significant gun safety legislation in nearly 30 years, securing hundreds of millions in funding to prevent, interrupt, and reduce crime, including unprecedented investments in community-led crime prevention and intervention. President Biden also signed into law the PACT Act, expanding access to health care and benefits related to toxic exposures for veterans and their survivors, as well as the CHIPS and Science Act to boost American manufacturing, strengthen supply chains, and create jobs. There was the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, the announcement of up to $20,000 in debt relief for Pell Grant recipients and $10,000 for other borrowers whose incomes were under $125,000, a move that could help more than 40 million borrowers. The Electoral Count Reform and Presidential Transition Improvement Act to better protect our democracy, capping off the year. Thousands of Americans gathered on the White House South Lawn to celebrate as President Biden signed the Respect for Marriage Act into law, a vital step forward for an administration that has done more to advance LGBTQI plus equality than ever before it. By any measure, but that's only the tip of the iceberg. For every high-profile bill signing on the South Lawn, there have been dozens of other highly impactful executive actions, agency regulations, and notable initiatives centered on delivering opportunity for the American people. And this was a statement by Ambassador Susan E. Rice. yesterday in the briefing room at the White House. The White House has seen a number of pronouncements in the last few days. As many are looking forward to 2023 and asking questions as to how the American people can expect things to transpire in the areas of security and safety and the ongoing struggle to address the immigration conflicts and how that is affecting the American economy. Those families that are concerned based on what they are experiencing with organizations such as ICE, and children who fear their lives may be disrupted. So we'll share with you one of the press briefings that were issued. Press briefing by Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. Last week, that addresses some of the national concerns. We'll join her at the White House right now.
All right, good afternoon, everyone.
I have one thing at the top for all of you. First, I want to wish a happy Hanukkah to all who celebrate. This evening, the President and the First Lady will host a Hanukkah reception at the White House following a blessing and the menorah lighting. The President will address the rise of anti-Semitism in the U.S. and around the world and reiterate that we must continue to forcefully reject all form of hate, anti-Semitism, and violence in our country. The President and First Lady will also mark a new tradition, adding the first ever White House menorah to the White House collection, marking the first Jewish artifact to be added to the White House archives, which was made by the White House Carpentry Shop. Last week, the President launched a new effort to develop a national strategy to counter the scourge of anti-Semitism. Earlier this year, he convened a first-of-its-kind summit to combat hate-fueled violence. The President has secured the largest increase in federal funding ever for the physical security and nonprofits, including synagogue and Jewish community centers. With that, Darlene, you want to kick us off?
Yes, ma'am. Is there any comment that you'd like to offer on the fact that the January 6th committee has held its final public hearing, it's wrapping up its work, it's preparing to release the report on Wednesday?
So as we're saying, you've heard me say this many times, and the President as well, we've been very clear from the beginning that what we saw on January 6th was the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. And the President has been very clear. Our democracy continues and remains under threat, and we all have a part to protect it. The committee has been doing important bipartisan work to get to the truth of what happened on that very day. So we can make sure that that doesn't happen again. So I'll leave it there.
What about the committee's referral of four members of Congress to the House Ethics Committee for ignoring subpoenas to participate in investigations?
So you know what, Darlene, that's a very good question. And what I would say to you is that you would have to ask those very Republicans their own to speak for their own actions here and have them explain themselves. Look, I'm not going to get into the weeds of the investigation from here and the process, but again, you should have them explain themselves on this very issue.
One last question. Republican-led states have asked the Supreme Court to intervene and not allow Title 42 to expire on Wednesday, as a different court has said. Is there any reaction to that? And did the administration in some way hoping that the court will intervene and extend Title 42 to help you all out of the situation that is brewing at the border.
Look, I'm not going to get into any legal determinations or speculations or, get ahead of the process here. DOJ is clearly leading this investigation. What I can tell you is what the Homeland Security has been doing. As you all know, Secretary Mayorkas was at the border just last week. He talked about how they are surging resources to the border, and we have additional robust planning underway. But we need Congress to give us the funds we requested to do this in a safe, orderly, and humane way. And here's the thing. If Republican Congress are serious about protecting the border, if they are serious about securing the border, if they are serious about the challenges that we're currently seeing, that they should be able to get involved here and make sure that the men and women of the Department of Homeland Security have the resources they need, they are going to need to do their jobs. I know you guys are seeing some charts behind me, but again, just listing out, this is what is needed. This is what we're asking, that $3.5 billion of funding request that we're asking of Congress. And also, this is what we have been doing to surge resources at the border to deal with, to address when Title 42 has to be lifted on Wednesday.
To follow on that, the mayor of El Paso said over the weekend that the influx of migrants on Wednesday will be incredible. He said it will be huge and that they're not prepared to deal with it with the current resources that they have. So, we have the chart up here, but, can you walk us through what the plan is to help that city?
Absolutely. So let me just give you what the DHS is doing, and this includes making sure that we give assistance to those very cities like El Paso. For example, DHS has deployed additional agents and processing capabilities to El Paso, and 23,000 agents are working to secure the southern border. Let's not forget, those 23,000 agents, that is a historic number, and that's because of the work that this president has done. And so that's the most ever that we've ever seen doing this work. And it's in addition to nearly 1,000 Border Patrol processing coordinators, DHS has also put in place technologies like linear ground detection systems and automated surveillance towers, and is increasing security at ports of entry. They're also adding 10 soft-sided CBP holding facilities. But again, we need Congress to provide us the additional resources we've requested to do this in a safe, orderly, and humane way. If they are serious, Republicans in Congress are serious about securing the border, then they should assist in making sure the men and women at the DHS have what they need to get this done.
You mentioned surging resources. I had asked you in September specifically about El Paso, and you had said at the time that DHS administration was surging resources to the region, working to quickly decompress the area. Has that surge of resources been maintained for the last several months? And is that sustainable? Now if you're talking about another surge of resources, is that on top of what had already been done in September? And how long can we keep doing the surge like that?
So a couple of things. I mean, that's one of the reasons we're asking for additional funding, that $3.5 billion. And look, that scale up air and ground transportation capabilities to move migrants from processing to less crowded border patrol sectors and quickly remove them if they don't have a legal basis to remain, and set up additional CBP funding, holding facilities, pardon me, and speed up the processing time so individuals can have their asylum claims heard faster, hire more than 300 additional agents to join our force of 23,000 agents working to secure the border, secure additional technologies and equipment like automated processing systems, law enforcement radios, upgraded surveillance and inspection technologies, and much more. Increased support for border cities and towns like El Paso. Look, this is why we're asking Congress for this additional funding. Again, if Republicans in Congress are serious, if they want to help the men and women at the DHS, they certainly will assist and get this funding to us to get this additional support and resources to the men and women at DHS.
Karine, is the Biden administration looking at sending migrants to Mexico via the expedited removal process if Title 42 ends?
So look, I know there have been a lot of rumors, a lot of speculations. I'm not going to go off of everything. I wouldn't go off of everything that you're hearing quite yet, but we will have some more to share tomorrow, and there will be a call, too, on this very on these very, very varying issues.
Well, thank you. And there's estimates of 50,000 migrants in Mexico waiting to cross if Title 42 ends. Is that accurate, and would that overwhelm the Border Patrol?
So look, I don't have a number for you at this time. What I can say is that we know smugglers will try to spread misinformation to take advantage of these vulnerable migrants. But I want to be very clear here. The fact is that the removal of Title 42 does not mean the border is open. Anyone who suggests otherwise is simply doing the work of these smugglers who, again, are spreading misinformation, and which is very dangerous. When Title 42 goes away, as we are, as we have to do because of a court order, which is on Wednesday, as all of you know, we will go back to Title 8, which allows a process to make sure that people can make their asylum claims heard. Those who do not have a legal basis to remain will be quickly removed. And so we will continue to fully enforce our immigration laws in a fair, orderly, and humane manner. But again, we need Congress to deliver on the funding that we're requesting from them.
The president's been very equivocal around criticism before, towards his predecessor related to January 6th and related to January 6th. But does he agree with the statement from the congressman today that the former president is unfit to hold any office in the country?
So look, as it relates to January, as it relates to the January 6th committee, we've been pretty clear on here. Right from here, we're going to be very careful not to politicize this process at all. The committee's work has been substantive and based on facts. Some of the actions that they are taking involve potential criminal investigation, as you know. So I just want to be very careful and refer you to the Department of Justice on those, because this administration and the DOJ conduct criminal investigation independently, free of any sort of any kind of political interference or any interference at all. But what I can say, and what you've heard from this president these past 2 years, is he's going to consistently speak out about this, about what happened on that day, and will continue to speak out about defending our democracy against ongoing threats. And he's not going to shy away from that, but we're just not going to comment any further. As you know, this could be, there is a potential criminal investigation.
And one more on immigration. A couple months ago, Jake Sullivan was talking about the intensive diplomatic effort that's underway, particularly with three countries starting to drive the makeup and composition of some of the migrants, where we had little or no diplomatic relations with those countries, which complicated things on the asylum side. Have there been any breakthroughs or any agreements on those particular diplomatic efforts, particularly moving up to Wednesday?
So look, as you know, the president of Ecuador was here. That wasn't the main topic, clearly. One of the topics was migration, and you know, I can go more into that if you will. But look, we have some good examples of how diplomacy has worked. With the Venezuela Enforcement Initiative, we announced earlier this year to address the record number of Venezuelan nationals arriving at the border. And look, that initiative has resulted in a drastic 90% a drop in the number of Venezuelan nationals arriving at the border. Average daily encounters are down from about 1,100 a day to 200. So look, those diplomatic conversations have helped. You know that we've held a leadership forum right in LA not too long ago, a couple months ago, where we talked about what's going on with the Western Hemisphere with those leaders, and came up with a plan on how to deal with that. And so that's because of this president's leadership, and we'll continue to have those conversations. I don't have anything to share with you at this time, but we'll have more in the upcoming days.
Two things on the same topic. You're asking for $3.2 billion roughly from Congress to help pay for all these new or ongoing plans across the border. Let's say that money comes in the omnibus this week. What's the plan after that to work with Congress to address this issue?
Like,
beyond. Look, we have, I mean, Ed, we have from day one have asked Congress to help us with this issue, right, by putting forward the immigration reform bill. That's on day one that the president had requested that, had asked that. That's to deal with modernizing the immigration, this broken immigration system that we currently have, and also to really protect our DACA recipients and do so much more. And so we have reached out. We've done outreach to Congress. We have asked them, and by acting, again, putting forth this piece of legislation.
Virtually no change in immigration policy with Democrats
Again, we've asked for the $3.5 billion. We're going to continue to ask Congress to assist in helping with, especially congressional Republicans, to help us with what's going at the border, if they are indeed serious about doing that. But look, even with that, without their assistance, without many Republicans being involved here, congressional Republicans, we have secured more resources for the border than any president who preceded this current president. He has most agents ever, as I said, the 23,000 agents. And let's not forget, he's taking historic action to seize record levels of fentanyl from entering our country and taking thousands of smugglers off the streets. And that's without congressional Republicans assisting here. So the president has made this a priority. Now, as Title 42 is going to be lifted on Wednesday due to a court order, we've put forth a $3.5 billion funding request from Congress. If they are serious about this, if congressional Republicans are serious about this, they would take this up instead of doing political stunts.
This is going to be big news, and it is big news, across the Western Hemisphere, because migrants aren't just coming from the Northern Triangle anymore. They're coming from Chile, from Peru, from Ecuador, the president here today, Venezuela, Colombia, of course. What is the White House's message to somebody who may see this somewhere in the Western Hemisphere and think, after Wednesday, it's going to be easier to get into the United States?
So first, I want to say the president of Ecuador has been a very good partner to us on this very issue, so I want to make that very, very clear. But again, I stated this to Steve, and I'll say this again. The fact that the removal of Title 42 is happening in just a day or two doesn't mean that the border is open. It just doesn't mean that. When Title 42 goes away, we will go back to Title 8, which allows for a process to make sure that people can have their own asylum claims heard, and those who do not have a legal basis to remain will be quickly removed. That doesn't change the process that we have been moving forward with since day one of this administration. Look, we are surging assistance to the border, as I've laid out very clearly, as Secretary Mayorkas has the past week or so, and so we're going to continue to do that. But again,
plain English to migrants who might be thinking about it, what should they do after Wednesday?
I just laid that really clear. It would be wrong to think that the border is open. It is not open, and I just want to be very, very clear about that.
You, we're meeting here just minutes after, as Darlene pointed out, they deferred the presumed next Speaker of the House to the Ethics Committee for defying a congressional subpoena. Not really been here before. Can the president proceed working with a House Speaker who defies a subpoena from his colleagues?
So a couple of things. I do want to go back for a second to your immigration question. One of the reasons that I want to be very clear that to folks that the border is not open and we will remove using Title 8 is because by not being very clear on that, we are doing the work of the smugglers who are going to put forth misinformation. So we want to be very clear on that piece. Look, the president has said from the president, when he was president, when he was vice president, when he was a senator, he has always been willing to work across the aisle to get things done on behalf of the American people. He said this right after the midterms. We were very clear that we want to continue to work in a bipartisan way. We've gotten more than 200 bills signed by this president that were bipartisan bills. And let's not forget the historic pieces of legislation. Just on Friday, the president was in Delaware talking about the PACT Act, a bipartisan effort that's going to help millions of veterans across the country. Let's not forget, not too long ago, just last week, we were on the South Lawn celebrating gay marriage, and that was also a bipartisan piece of legislation. More than 5,000 people, Americans, were standing outside on the lawn. So we have had those successes. We've had the CHIPS and Science Act, and we have had others, the bipartisan infrastructure legislation. So it can be done. As it relates to McCarthy or any other Republican to your question about their role in any of this, I would ask them. This is a question for them to answer about their own actions and for them to explain.
When is the president going to sign the NDAA?
He's going to sign that later this week.
Sign it later this week. You can't identify it for us.
I don't have a date for you.
Can I ask you specifically about the president's thinking on the fact that this NDAA obviously includes the termination of the military vaccination program?
So look, every NDAA, and I've said this a couple times in the past 10 days, has some provisions we support and some we do not. Clearly, the president was opposed to rolling back the vaccine mandate, but we saw that Republicans in Congress decided that they rather fight against the health and well-being of the troops than protecting them. So making sure our troops are prepared and ready for service is a priority for this president. The vaccination requirement for COVID does just that. And while the president opposes this repeal, but with more than 98% of our active duty troops vaccinated, that means that he overwhelmingly bulk of our force is in compliance with the requirement and remains protected against COVID, because we've seen more than 98% of them are fully vaccinated.
So to be very clear, would the president welcome those who left the service or refused to get vaccinated if they now say, I want to serve the United States military?
So look, that is something that the Department of Defense has to decide on specific service members. What I can tell you, look, that, again, they have a process on how that runs, the Department of Defense. We will let them run that process. What we can say is that, you know, the president, as I mentioned, he's going to sign the NDAA. He was very clear. I was very clear from here about how, you know, how he opposed the fact that congressional Republicans removed the vaccination mandate from that piece of legislation.
Let me ask you one more question just to punctuate what we've been saying about what happened on the Hill today. Obviously, we're getting an executive summary, getting new details about all of this. I know you don't want to interfere in any form with what the Department of Justice is going to decide. But the fundamental motivation for the president running for office was, as he described it, this battle for the soul of the nation. About 964 people, as I have counted so far, I think is the latest number, have been charged for their role as rioters. But we heard from Jamie Raskin today, ours is not a system of government where foot soldiers go to jail and masterminds and ringleaders get a free pass. If no, quote, masterminds or ringleaders are charged, well, how does the president sort of view the status of this battle for the soul of the nation?
So I'm certainly not going to get ahead of any legal outcome that may come out of but look, but the president, I said this just moments ago, he believes that our democracy is still under attack and that we have to do everything that we can to protect it. He gave two very, very important speeches on our democracy and where we stand today. And so we, again, he believes we have to do everything to protect it. And not only does he believe that, but majority of Americans who exercise their right to vote during the midterms believe the same as well. And so, again, we have to do everything that we can to protect it. That's what the president believes. He's going to continue to speak to this. And, you know, what we saw on January 6th, as the president has said, was an attack on our democracy. It was the worst attack on our democracy since Civil War.
Just a question on migration. The president tasked the vice president with studying and working on the root causes of some of these issues. I'm wondering if there's any update from this side of the White House on what she's been doing and what she will continue to do.
As you know, the president appreciates the partnership that he has with the vice president. You're right, that has been her charge to work in a diplomatic way on finding the root causes of migration. I don't have anything to lay out specifically on what that work looks like. But again, we appreciate her partnership, and I would probably refer you to her office on anything specific on the work that she's doing.
And that was a press briefing. Catherine Jean-Pierre, addressing a number of issues that the Biden administration has handled in 2022. That's all for today. I'm Naima Latif. You've been listening to On Air Daily News. Join us again Monday, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern, and wherever you are in the world, you can listen live and feel free to call in your good news at 515-605-9749. Until next week, enjoy the rest of your day and Happy New Year.